Mono the Subway Art Blog, here with Jason Epping. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
I'm really excited to have you here because you're the brains behind a great many Subway Art projects. Just to name a few, the Pro Pants...
Movement.
The Pro Pants movement. That seems to appear at all the No Pants Subway rides.
Yes.
The Pixelators, which have been featured in the Trespass book, street art book. The spoiler alert signs, which that's probably one of your more recent projects.
Correct, yeah.
You have work that's been installed in the Underbelly project, which we're very interested in. Several other Improv Everywhere gigs, like the Subway Art Gallery and the High Five Escalator. And I think probably the furthest back is the Take a Seat project. So, very excited to have you here.
Yeah, no.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
So, let's start off with the basics. Where are you from?
I grew up in a suburb of Houston in Texas.
Okay. And do you have any, art background?
No, I fell into it accidentally. My dad is a petroleum engineer. My mom is a CPA, so, very practical people. To answer that question, I sort of was making things that then people started calling art, and then I was like, oh, that's interesting. and then people who were interested in art continued to be interested in these things I was doing, and I was like, well, I guess I should maybe fit it into that context somehow.
Interesting. So the title of artist was kind of planted on you.
Yeah, and I like to say that people accuse me of making art. I try to shy away from that word. I think there's a lot of baggage that comes with that.
That's good.
So, yeah.
And that's what I respect about a lot of, in quotes, street art, is that it really doesn't have a lot of that baggage, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, there's a different kind of baggage, I think, that's come, especially in the last year or so, with, Exit the Gift Shop and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, and everyone in New York considers them an artist, or at least everyone I know, So it's just a weird, attempt to be able to put those concerns aside and just say I'm doing this thing and you can call it whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
And so is the dirty word art? Is that what brought you to New York?
I came to New York initially for an internship. I serve as the assistant curator of digital media at the Museum of the Moving Image, and I started as an intern and worked my way to that. So I did not come to New York. I actually didn't know New York City was a place people wanted to be. It's really funny. So I grew up in Houston area and went to school in Los Angeles, and I was looking to travel a little bit and didn't really have the cash, but there was this paid internship, and I was like, well, I can go to New York for 3 months. That's a new place.
So how long have you been here now?
That was almost 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. 5 years. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I got here and within a few days, it was the most at home I'd ever felt anywhere. There's immediately everything clicked, and it took me a long time to figure out what that is. But I think a lot of that was sort of an urgency and sort of this everyone is here, sort of has an idea that they're only going to be here for a while. And there's a limited amount of time where we have to make it count. And also being sort of the center of the world in many ways, There's just an urgency here that doesn't exist everywhere else, and this an attempt to make it count, and that's what I really loved about the city.
It's interesting for me getting into all this stuff too, because I grew up here and I also didn't know that New York was the place to be until I really started working in the city and writing about art.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear that someone not from New York also kind of had that same experience.
Well, I might be the stranger case, but yeah, no, that's interesting to hear.
So you told me about your day job. It's interesting that I find that you are not anonymous, unlike most in quotes street artists. Yeah. So was that a conscious decision, or is that something that just kind of happened as well?
Yeah. So I was always interested in pranks. And I did a project called Total Crisis Panic Button. It's sort of my parting gift to Los Angeles right before I moved out here. I should back up. I did a couple other sort of pranks in Houston. My sister and I, for 2 years, pulled these things we called anti-pranks, which were sort of positive pranks, at Christmas time in my in my parents' neighborhood or city. And then sort of I saw this Total Crisis Panic button as sort of like an outgrowth of that, and in which we replaced crosswalk instruction signs in Los Angeles with slightly altered text, which basically made it look like this button was like a crisis button that you were pushing because in the case everything was going wrong. You're supposed to start running, stay fearful and alert, obey orders.
And push the button.
And push the button, right. Yeah, yeah. And people were posting about it online many months later because I didn't know anything about sort of this like I said, like a PR cycle about like how to what blogs to send your photos to and like how to like write about it in a way that it would like proliferate on the internet. I had no sense of this. I was just doing this because I thought it was interesting. And then people like months later, someone sent a photo to Boing Boing and it was going all over the web. And someone like called me an artist. And when they were posting it, like they said, like a yeah, and I don't think they said street artist either. It was just like sort of prankster/artist. And I was like, interesting.
It's interesting that you got linked up with Improv Everywhere when you came to New York.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I don't know if Charlie knows this. Charlie Todd is the founder. But
right, he's actually, I'm not sure if he is still, but he actually checks out my blog. So maybe he'll listen to this.
Hey, Charlie. when I found out that I was moving to New York City, the first thing I did was sign up for the agents list because...
Cool.
I was always inspired. Whenever the new write-up came out, this was before the videos even. This was like, there were like photos and write-ups, and like every single person who was involved in the mission would come and like write a 2-paragraph write-up of what they'd done. I loved those, and I was like, I never thought I'd be in the city, and when I found out I was like, I cannot wait to participate in these things. and then through certain circumstances, became friends with Charlie.
Cool. Well, I guess we might as well use that as a segue to get into a few specific projects that you've done. Let's talk about Pro Pants, because the No Pants subway ride this year was actually just about a month ago.
Yep.
How did that start, and how many years ago did that start?
This year was the fourth year, so it started, I guess, in 2008.
Okay.
That was just sort of a reaction. So this is actually how I met Charlie. I mean, I've been to several of the Improv Everywhere proper events, but my friend Jen Small and I were frequent co-conspirators. We were like, well, No Pants is coming up. Do you want to do No Pants? And we're both like, well, you know, this is like I think at that point it was like the sixth or seventh year, and we're like, it's how much of a prank is it anymore? You know, like you know, it's a parade at this point.
Yeah.
And how can we liven it up? So we decided after lots of ideas that we were going to present the other side of the case, you know, and we were going to sort of come at this. In the first year, actually, it was much more sort of playing this, religious center.
Well, I mean, I attended this year, and I got like the whole Scientologist feel from what I saw.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that, you know, it's funny. I mean, Jen and I have you know, both have good but different ideas. You know, so there's a great tension there that's always sort of, as we're figuring out where to take it for the next year and the next year. But I mean, the first year I like dressed up as a preacher, and we made these pamphlets and stickers, okay, and had people going. I was like out preaching in the subway. About accepting pants, and I had this whole story about I was unemployed and I was lonely, and then I discovered pants, and then suddenly people would talk to me, and you know, and you know, it was the whole thing. It's sort of using the language of Christianity and that sort of that evangelism. And actually, it's funny, we sort of encountered this really interesting mob mentality where I actually got de-pantsed in public as like this like large crowd was sort of gathering around me, and the language, even though we were both playing, the language got really aggressive, and it was a really interesting moment because it was this moment where, you know, I think we're like I'm very a big proponent of like sort of theater, not just being on the stage and being everyday life.
You know,
but like,
I had a question about that because like it seems like a lot of your projects have some sort of slight kind of theater hint to them. I was wondering if you had any sort of theater background.
Interesting. Well, in LA, I went to film school. So
yeah, okay. I see that in your work.
Interesting. In which places? I'm curious to hear.
Well, there's the whole Improv Everywhere thing. Like, that's kind of theatrics. But also, I know in your Pixelators, which we'll get into later, you used the fusion gel for your...
Yes, very good.
So I was like, how does he know about that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. That's straight from... I did a lot of cinematography in school.
There you
so
go. That's good. That's yeah. Interesting. Okay. I'm
glad that's how connection. I knew. Yeah, that's great. Do you have theater experience?
I don't. No. Well, aside from playing drums in a production of Hair in college, no.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, then how did you know what diffusion gel was?
Through Poster Child, who we interviewed on the podcast about a year ago.
Yeah, totally. Cool.
But sorry, continue with...
I was just sort of getting into... So then, you know, we were like, that was a... some bad things, you know, some things we'd like to change happened the first time, and so we decided to make it more of a, like, an advocacy group, like, and so what we tell I'm getting ahead of myself. So what we decided was we were living in a world where maybe people hadn't heard of pants before, you know, and we just want to present them with this opportunity to learn more about this thing that's changed our lives, and maybe it would help you. And then, so we made another pamphlet the second year, and then the third year we made a third pamphlet, and we had, like, sandwich boards.
This year you even had pants to give away.
Yeah, actually, we've been doing that for a few years now, okay. Too. Yeah.
I love the reaction that the pantsless people have when they come up to the, like, little pro pants booth. They get so angry, like, ah, no pants.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of our job to, like, really diffuse that in a way, because...
And they're like, no, we're not putting pressure on you. Exactly. We just want to give you this
and it's
pants
actually,
test.
Yeah, it's really disarming, actually, because they're like, oh, okay. You know, they're, like, ready to make us, like, sort of the enemy.
Right.
But we have to be, like, this pacifist minority. And, you know, it works out. It's really interesting. And what I really love about how it's evolved the last 2 years is that, so last year, we solicited on Nonsense NYC, which is a popular mailing list in New York City, and got a lot of people I'd never met before. In the first 2 years, it was just some of our friends, but the third year, and then this year, there were people we'd never met before who came and were, like, very happy to engage in this. And I remember last year walking around and just listening to how other people were sort of making this their own experience, and I realized, like, we'd created something that was, like, much bigger than ourselves in a way, in which, like, it was, like, literally interactive theater. It was this way where everyone was sort of making this experience their own. And I had a friend who used to be an engineer, and, like, he was explaining the benefits of pants from an engineering perspective, you know, talking about how, like, insulates your legs, and, like, this cloth is, like, specifically designed to, like, hold your body more thin. And when you don't have this, sort of going along that way. And my personal preference was to talk about it socially, you know, why I want pants socially. And there are other people who are talking about it in other ways. And it was, like, really interesting to realize that there's this whole narrative that was happening that each person was creating all by themselves. I'm really happy with how that's gone.
Cool. So let's talk about another Improv Everywhere project that you were involved on that is very much involved in the subway, and I've written about it on the Subway Art blog. The Subway Art Gallery opening that happened on 23rd and 8th.
Yeah. So that was also with Jen Small.
Whose idea was that?
That was Jen's idea.
Okay.
And she came to me early on, and I think originally the idea was to just sort of make the ads the art.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of artists, even ones we've interviewed, but also in the past, have used the whole idea of the enclosed space as a way to, like, show art. But also, I mean, the ads are actually framed.
Exactly.
So it's just, like, the perfect
public
underground museum.
No, exactly. I mean, and I think you can understand why that idea was arrived at. There's sort of this perfect setting, like, in this framework, in this context that you're used to seeing things in. Often the walls are tiled white, you know? So it was a great idea, and then we sort of extrapolated it to, like, all these things that were in the subway station. So she came to me with that idea, and we sort of, like, workshopped it some more and then presented it to Charlie, and that's... And then we did that.
The rest is history.
The rest is history. Yeah, exactly. No, Charlie found a cellist who actually has this really great comedy act with her cello. I mean, who knew cellos could be funny?
Yeah, let's give a quick breakdown of everything that happened in this. So it's the idea is that they turned the subway station into an art gallery, and they had an opening reception inside the gallery, in which they had a cello player They had people give, you had like people in tuxedos giving away drinks or something.
Yeah, yeah. We had a bartender giving away apple cider. It was not alcoholic.
Okay.
We had a coat check.
Right, the coat check. And what were people's reactions like when you were actually doing it in the subway? People, just people there.
Yeah, I mean, sort of what you would hope, you know, like sort of a perplexed, you know, sort of trying to figure out what's going on. But like, it was funny because it was very subtle in many ways too. Right. I mean, did
anyone think it was completely serious, or did a lot of people, most people?
I think most people knew this wasn't exactly real. Yeah. But it was like so elaborate. Like, how would you know? We had we had placards. Jen had wrote these really great pieces of text describing each work, and we had handouts. And we had someone going around like putting red stickers on pieces that were sold.
How long did it take to plan the whole thing from its inception to when it happened?
I mean, we were probably on email for a couple months. Yeah.
Okay, not bad. Cool. So, any behind the scenes funny stories from that, or?
We left the placards up, and they stayed up for several days.
Really?
Yeah. You know, because again, they're so subtle and like, I don't know, yeah, not destructive. So
I don't remember what the placards look like. Were they in the style of the whole Arts for Transit, like gold, black on gold type of stuff? Or
well, we made signs that said, we called it the Service Changes Gallery. That's what we made it look like. Because the signs used to say Service Changes and then describe what was going on. So we sort of did like the paragraph write up in there. But we actually had these, like, I don't know, three inch by 5 inch pieces of paper that sort of had the name of the piece, the artist, and this sort of like a two-sentence description of like why it was interesting or important.
Was there a price list too?
No, we never actually made a price list. Okay. Yeah, no, that could have been interesting. But a lot of this is available online. You can see a lot of like the photos of the placards if you want to read up. And I really implore you to. I think they're really funny, like art speak.
Yeah, I still find like random tweets and posts about that even today.
Oh,
even though this project happened, was it over a year ago now?
It may have been in 2000. I think it was. It could have been late 2009, maybe. Yeah. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. Yeah. It's around there. It's at least over a year.
Yeah.
But so the last Improv Everywhere project that I wanted to talk to you about was the High Five Escalator. Pretty simple concept, but pretty awesome at the same time. What station did this happen in again?
That was 53rd Street, 6EV.
Oh, is this the one that's closest to like one of the museums?
It's right underneath the Citigroup building.
Okay.
Is that right, 53rd Street? Yeah. 53rd Street and Lex.
Okay.
And there's this like crazy, it's like crazy deep underground. And there's a giant escalator that goes up. And so that was the origin of the idea. Charlie came to me and said he was thinking about something right there. And we were talking about signs and that sort of stuff. And then I got to talking about high fives. And that was like sort of like the best, I think the most uplifting, you know, the most fun thing that we could think of for that. And thinking about like all these people on their morning commutes who like, or like, I don't know, 50, 60 feet underground. I looked it up, and the elevator at one point was like the longest elevator in the world when it was first installed.
The escalator?
The escalator. Yeah. It was like the longest escalator, 50, 60, 80 feet. I don't remember.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge escalator. It takes
how many minutes to get up there? Like a few minutes at least, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So what was the concept behind it? How long did it go on for? Did you guys...
I think it was 45 minutes. So for the audience who hasn't seen it yet, we had five signs and had five people holding the signs spaced, starting from the bottom of the escalator, going all the way to the top, that said, Rob Wants was first sign. To Give You was the second sign. A High Five was the third. Get Ready. And then there's a sign that says Rob with an arrow, which I am holding above Rob, who has his hand extended out, ready to give people coming up the escalator.
Oh, so you didn't actually give people high fives, you just held a sign?
I just held the sign. Rob was the lucky one who got to give the high fives. and so we estimated about 2,000 high fives were given over 45 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah. It's fun. It was really cool to see like this transformation of someone like coming up, like another day of compute, and then all of a sudden like, what is this? And
did you guys do it in the morning?
Or? Yeah, it was like 8:30 in the morning. I think, something like that. Yeah, no, it worked out really well. And there's even people who are like trying to stifle the smile and they're like, oh, okay, you know, and they give a high five. It was cool. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's an achievement to get a smile out of New Yorkers on their commute.
definitely. Especially in the morning.
That's the great thing about, another great thing about subway art is that, you know, it's, people get so hung up on their usual sort of routine that when you bring them out of their routine, it's a beautiful thing.
So this transitions into my question for you, Joey. I'm really curious what your interest is in subway art and why you've sort of chosen this specific field.
It's interesting. I mean, the original concept for the blog was just to be a place to post mine and anyone else who's willing to submit the random funny photos of things happening in the subway that it seems like everyone has at least one of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had taken a bunch of photos on my cell phone of, you know, wet paint sign anagrams and advertisement alterations. And I'm sure, I didn't know this at the time, but I'm sure Poster Boy's work had a lot to do with me thinking, oh, this stuff happens on the subway all the time. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. So that was the original concept of the blog. But then when I started looking into subway art and I just discovered like a huge history behind art in the subway.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many artists throughout history that have produced work in the subway, about the subway, performed in the subway, etc. So it just became this whole thing where it kind of snowballed, really.
Yeah.
It's not something... What I'm doing now is not what I pictured when I started.
Of course. Yeah. No, that's great. I think... I'm glad to hear this, because I think there's something really leveling, or... You know, the subway is like a gathering point. It's where sort of, no matter where you're from or what you do, like, you find yourself in the subway in New York City. And so that's interesting. That's
right. It's a really interesting location for art. Because number one, people aren't expecting it. You know, you could take art out of the gallery and put it into a public space where people might not be expecting it. And I think there's a huge potential for it to be appreciated and a lot more and seen by a lot more people.
Right, there's a huge audience. Exactly.
Yeah. So, it's interesting how it just, you know, more and more stuff keeps happening and there's always more stuff to write about. Like, that's why I am still doing it.
Sure.
That's why I didn't fizzle out after I posted the 5 photos I had on my phone.
Right.
So, where were we though?
We were finishing up.
Enough for questions for me.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'll ask you just a little bit about what everyone wants to know about.
Yeah,
that's the Underbelly Project.
Sure.
For those of you who have not heard about this, and I'm sure most of you have, Underbelly Project was this project, art project that a couple of street artists came up with, and essentially they had found an unfinished, abandoned subway station. And over the course of about a year and a half to 2 years, took various artists down there, installed artwork, did paintings, etc. And our man here, Jason Epping, had a piece in the in this underground art show as well. And the piece was called The Shadow Machine. Do you want to tell us about that piece?
Sure. The Shadow Machine was a collaboration between myself and street artist I Am.
Okay. Poster Child.
Post has also done some stuff.
Done some work.
We're all friendly. I see you have one of their stickers.
Yes.
He does a lot of stuff with Muybridge figures. Edward Muybridge was a someone who sort of pioneered cinema. He set up these series of cameras that could capture motion really before we had motion cameras. And we came up with this idea to reanimate a specific plate of images which depicted some blacksmiths that were hammering away at something on an anvil. So we built this what we termed an analog projection system, which...
It was 6 frames, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what I Am did is he boiled down this plate into 6 repeatable frames and painted them onto a square foot piece of plexi. And I developed this, or figured out a way to get these really narrow beam LEDs that could, they're about 2 feet away from the plexi, that could then cast a shadow that had kind of a sharp shadow, and would, when done in a sequence, just reanimated this thing. So it's very hard to explain, but there's video,
I'll just have video of it. Yeah. I'll just have to link to it.
Yeah, yeah, but so yeah, and you know, part of the challenge of that was like to make it modular, so it could be delivered to this this space.
You know what? This is a perfect opportunity to plug your website. Do you want to quickly do that?
Sure. My website is jasonepink.com.
Oh, I would have never guessed that
address. Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to spell that for those of us who don't know how to spell Epink?
Sure. Well, my last name is spelled E-P-P-I-N-K. Okay. But I also, I think I still own jasonepic.com.
It's funny because when I first heard your name, I totally thought Post said Epic.
Yeah, yeah, and I should really rock that more.
It's pretty epic.
It is. No, exactly.
I had an opportunity recently to catch up with one of the people who transported artists down into this location. And he said there's something that he's announcing sometime soon. Do you know anything about this? Something related to Underbelly? Is there any news to be that's coming that hasn't been had yet?
If there is, I'm not at liberty to say. Okay. I'm not
anything that you're
sure.
aware of, though, just out of curiosity?
Probably everything I'm aware of, I'm not at liberty to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
So it's pretty upsetting, though, that a lot of that stuff has been, like, at least at first, tagged over. Now I've heard reports of actually stuff being buffed over in the Underbelly. Do you remember exactly how many artists were down there?
I mean, those guys tell me like up to 100, wow. or almost 100 artists yeah. were involved. That's really the nature of it all. And
I'm sure that's not a surprise after they announced it publicly to the New York Times and Times of London, etc.
Exactly. But actually, what's really interesting from the photos that I saw. You know, after all the tagging happened, the good pieces still really held their own. And I think that's really, like, it was funny, like, seeing the photos with the tags. The tagging just looks so petty. It looks so...
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like they put any effort into it. It was just sort of really quick throw-ups.
Yeah, no, and that was the point. Like, they were sort of, like, saying, you know, this is our space. This is our home. What are you doing here? Get out of here. The weird territoriality that comes with the graffiti versus street art tension. And, like... It's like, you know, I want to be, like, advocates for both sides of that, but it's really hard sometimes to justify a lot of that stuff. And in the end, like, the good pieces really held their own, even with these people's names on them. And it really, I think, when I heard about it before I saw the photo, it was like, I was really saddened by it, but actually seeing some of it in the photos, I was just like... It was like, you know, the street artists still really won in this case. Like, the taggers really sort of didn't do themselves any favors. They, I don't know, it was actually really uplifting to see that they hadn't really destroyed it to the extent that I think they wanted to.
Right. I mean, they didn't take time to, like, do bubble letters. They just kind of wrote their names on it, but, you know, the powerful pieces overpowered just the name, you know, just a quick name
exactly.
on it. So
yeah.
That's interesting. I haven't really seen any recent photos from down there, so I'm really curious as to what condition it's in.
Me too. Yeah, I haven't really heard much about it recently.
So that would be interesting to hear about. Anything? Any other details about the Underbelly that you want to talk about before we move on from that?
I can't really think of anything.
Okay, fair enough. I tried. This is a project I'm really excited to talk to you about because it's fairly well known. It was featured on Wooster Collective and in the book they wrote, Trespass, the street art compendium that they put together. Of course, it's the Pixelator. Where did the idea... first off, let me quickly describe it. You sort of made a grid of boxes.
Sure.
And covered it with, as we said, diffusion gel. And when you placed it over the electronic billboards at the subway stations, it sort of diffused the light and created a moving grid of colorful pixels.
Well said.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what I can say about
it. I've been practicing this all week. No. was there any other, like, former projects that have sort of influenced you in any way for coming up with the idea for that? I know there was something that came before that I've heard about that was just sort of a straight line, and you put that over your TV set and kind of created a line of color.
Yeah, you're referring to a piece by G. Lee called The Abstractor. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, really, it's funny that I sort of my best known piece is Pixelator, because I feel it's like the most derivative in some way, because I very simply took two pieces that I'd already seen and sort of like combined them together. So one is G. Lee's Abstractor, which he did both on his TV and in public space. And he just gets black foam core and tapes it over a TV, over a billboard, just so there's a small line. And what happens is you just see the small line of like changing, moving colors. And then I also saw a piece by Aaron Bartol called... I cannot remember what it was called, but it was essentially... the Pixelator for a TV, you know?
And, oh, it was, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
So what you did was really take it out into the public.
Exactly, exactly. And I guess it gained something from that in sort of a more specific reclaiming public space, taking back, you know, anti-advertising thing. It was really funny that I sort of hit on a lot of nerves simultaneously, sort of like the 8-bit crowd.
The 8-bit crowd. So it was on all the video game blogs, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You also hit the, you know, public ad campaign type of stuff, I'm sure.
Right, the anti-advertising, the street art stuff. And then also like the DIY stuff, because I published...
directions on
it. Exactly. I think that may have been like the strongest thing that sort of made it less of like an official artwork and more of sort of like a project that everyone should do. You know, that was sort of like, I think, the spirit that it was received in. So that's sort of the genesis of all that. And actually, when I had the idea, it was I had left New York for a couple of months to spend some time in Houston with my family, and I think that's when I saw... Actually, what actually sparked it all was another piece by Steve Lambert and then Graffiti Research Lab called like Criticism, where they sort of expanded on G. Lee's piece. They have a laser cutter at iBeam, so they cut out text that said like advertising is the real graffiti and that sort of like pedantry, and we're putting it on top of these video billboards and taking video, and that's when I sort of was like, oh, I remember G. Lee's thing and I remember Aram's thing, so sort of put it all together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So let me see if I had any other questions about Pixelator. Oh, well, we addressed the theater background thing. What was the public response to it? I mean, you've talked about a bit of the media response and whatnot. Like, what were the comments that you saw on Wooster Collective about that?
I mean, it was overwhelmingly positive, and actually it's really funny. It wasn't even Wooster Collective that made it. I mean, Wooster Collective was the beginning of, like, the attention it got. But then Kevin Rose of Dig itself, like, posted it on Dig.
Wow.
And that's when it was, like, on the front page of all that, and that's sort of when it really picked up steam. No, it was overwhelmingly positive. I mean, the most negative response I ever got was someone who emailed me, like, really nicely and was like, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, but, like, maybe you should think about how MTA might be losing a little advertising revenue.
It's funny that every artist that I have here kind of has a little story about one person coming up to them being like, hey, did you ever think about the MTA losing $50 from this advertising being up? It's like, come on, really?
Yeah, I mean, put it in perspective, and like, that's really a non sequitur. But like, even that guy was just like
maybe it's the same guy.
Yeah, maybe it was just really balanced.
He was
just like, yeah, no, totally. He was just like, I really like this, but you know, maybe you should think about this. It was. So that, I mean, that was like it. And then, you know, it's funny we're talking about internet reaction, but like street reaction was also, well, actually street reaction was very different. Yeah.
Right.
I met, you know, I would put it up and people, I would have a video camera like to get some documentation.
Sure.
And people would notice the video camera before they noticed what I was taping. And then they'd look at the video camera and they'd see it and they'd be like, oh, you know, and then we get to talking about that. But most people, of course, didn't even see it, didn't even realize it.
How many did you install in public?
I would estimate it's been like 6 or 7. I mean, it's weird. Like, sometimes I will leave them up and just go home, and that's the end of it. But sometimes I'll put it up and go to dinner and have drinks, and I'll come back and take it home with me. So it's like,
okay,
it just sort of depends if I want to make another one or, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it's funny, actually, two of my roommates, I just moved, and two of my new roommates actually just told me that they had, before they knew me, they had actually seen it in public.
Oh, really? Wow.
Before they knew me. That's so great. I'm like, so I always thought that no one had seen it in public and they'd only seen it online.
Yeah, I mean, because like these things are really ephemeral. I'm sure they don't last more than maybe a few hours. But even if it's up for a few hours, how many hundreds of thousands of people can see it in New York?
Exactly.
That's the beauty of New York.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was really cool. And I actually also got a commissioned professor at Columbia. Actually saw it in the street and then emailed me. He was like, hey, will you make me one? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Awesome.
So, you know.
So what is it? Is it made of foam core, like posts?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, made out of foam core and diffusion gel and glue. And that's it.
Simple.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can find instructions on the website.
On your website?
On my website,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So cool. I love that project.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's... I'm a video game nerd at heart, so the whole idea of pixels... you see my coasters.
Exactly, yeah. Nice little Mario.
I have some 8-bit coasters in my room. One of the other projects I wanted to talk to you about was this Take a Seat thing. This is probably one of the furthest back that I know about, where you sort of appropriated the chairs that you found in the garbage or being thrown away and brought them into the subway and turn them into additional public seating.
Yeah, so actually Take a Seat came after Pixlator. Pixlator was the first thing I
feel
did.
Like that may have actually been the first project that I heard about.
Okay, sure. I mean, I think I saw Pixlator, or the success of Pixlator, and then was like, oh, like, public space, that's really potent, you know? There's other things that can happen in the space. And, you know, sort of, parallel, I was walking to work, as I do now, and passed a lot of people throwing away a lot of, like, great stuff. And I remember seeing a lot of chairs in this walk to work over the course of the, you know, 6-8 months that I'd been here.
It's amazing. I think probably about 30% of the chairs that I have in my apartment right now are just chairs that were on the street.
Exactly. No, there's something about chairs that, like, they're so big you can't put them in a trash bag, but like they're, you don't want to break them down because someone else can use them. I don't know, there's just something weird. You always see chairs in the trash, and I thought, this is such a waste. You know, if it's a liability to this person, but if I can move it 8 blocks to a subway stop, it'll be an asset all of a sudden. And so that's the way I was thinking of it. It was like, there's something really interesting about this object. If it was in a different location that's very nearby, it would have a completely different value. It would have a positive value instead of a negative value. And so that's what I liked about that.
Cool. So was there... What was the reaction to that project? Did people immediately come up to you and be like, hey, what's that? Why are you putting a chair in
here? Well, it's funny because, like, when I would do it, I would put it in the station, I would take some photos, and I'd sit and wait for the train to take me.
Yeah.
And then I would just leave it there when I get on the train. So there's, like, only a few seconds where I'm actually leaving the chair, you know?
Yeah, but yeah.
In between all that time, I'm, like, maybe doing an art project, you know, like a photo project or something like that. So no one ever asked me at all. Except one time, I did bring two chairs down. I was taking a photo, and this guy's like, "Hey, do you need a model? Do you need someone to sit in there and for the photos?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And so we sat down and we talked about the project. And
nice.
That was that. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So the last project I wanted to briefly talk about is a pretty recent one. Spoiler alert signs. Those were installed in Bedford Avenue, right? The station.
There were
Bedford?
Three.
Okay.
Bedford, Lorimer, and Union Square, all on the L line. Because really the only. There's some other places with those LED signs, but.
Right. That was the pilot line for those signs. So, probably the most well known lines with them.
Exactly.
So how did that idea... That was a collaboration too, right?
Yeah, so Kevin Bracken of New Mindspace, actually, it was his idea. It must have been like a year and a half ago at this point. Like, sends me an email with a mock-up and is like, I want to do this. Let's do this. And I was like... And I loved it. You know, it was like a brilliant concept that could immediately be explained in a photograph. And he's like, but I don't know how to do this. How can we do this? And so I'd sort of figured out a relatively cheap way to do it really well. And
so yeah, I mean, you really got you got the design of the subway signs down pat with the whole white text on black, Helvetica, white line across it, sort of stuff.
Actually, well, knowing your expertise in Exodon's Grotesque Helvetica, I don't actually remember which one I used. Do you remember? Could you tell from that video which one I was using?
From my memory, I'm saying Helvetica, because I think it was modern-looking to me.
Yeah, I seem to remember that, too. But I remember I downloaded Exodon's Grotesque.
The S in spoiler alert, that's what would give
the
it
S.
away.
Yeah, the S definitely was more hooked down.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Okay, that's fair. I mean, the way they did that, I mean, this is like a common practice, but like took photos of signs and, you know, because there's a kerning. No one ever tells, everyone will say, oh, it's Helvetica Black. Is it Helvetica Black? Might be Helvetica Bold.
Helvetica Black is the even bolder one.
Right.
So I think it's probably black.
I think it is black. You know, everyone will tell you that, but they won't tell you like what the kerning is. So you have to like figure out the kerning and all that sort of stuff. So you take photos and all this sort of stuff, and I actually had to go down and like measure, you know, how big the text is, and it's 3 inches tall.
So you did your homework on this.
Oh no, several trips, and you know, I had to measure the width of those signs, and had to figure out how it's going to be attached. You know, you take several trips, and luckily you're on the subway anyway, so it's not like it's a special trip.
Right.
But and then so we. I mean, when I get the technical things, use Centro, which is like a PVC type of material, and got some vinyl cutting done, and then hooked them up with zip ties.
Cool.
Yeah. It was like, in the photos, it looks like super professional, but it was actually a pretty simple process.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how close you came to the quality of the MTA signs as well.
Well, and it's funny, actually, I have friends who have friends in the MTA and DOT, and what someone wrote to a friend had actually gotten the signs better than MTA gets the signs themselves. Like, especially I'm thinking of like do not lean on door signs in the subway.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed how terrible those are?
In what respect?
Just the typography. Like the O looks like it's been rotated 90 degrees, and like looks like out of proportion.
That's
to the
interesting because those are just stickers. So how did they mess those up?
It's terrible. Like,
I mean, I know a lot before they had computers, they did a lot of hand-cut signs. Right.
But surely those were done on computers, so why is it so messed up?
Yeah.
It's going to bug you when you see this now. It's like, it's so ridiculous. It's just like they had like three different size fonts that they like all like stretched out.
I mean, it's amazing even after they got Massimo Vignelli to design them a consistent sign style, that it's still complete chaos, really, when you look down in the subway. Because you still see the old school standard Exodon's Grotesque signs. You see the modern Helvetica ones. But then you just see the random, like, serif fonts just out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, those are, at this point, those are charming, though. You know, like, you can, I mean, those are...
Not even the old ones, though. Just like they just made a sign for a lot of the L-Train lines because of the automatic trains. And those are all in, like, serif fonts that are just completely random.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So that's funny to think about.
And they have like a giant design department too, don't they? Like, I think they have like several dozen.
I'm sure they do, but it's funny. I mean, like, I was very close to writing a long article about how the new subway map is complete crap.
The colors are terrible.
That's the thing. Yeah. I could do another whole podcast about that, but I won't get into it and bore everyone about it. But maybe I'll write an article about it one day.
Yeah, it was definitely a step down.
Right. Yeah. I feel like if anything, they had interns design it and not like designers. That's what I felt like.
Sorry, MTA. I love you, but that map was.
We love you and we hate you.
Yeah.
So. I have a couple of general questions for you. We touched upon this a little bit earlier, but why do you think so many of your projects kind of revolve around the subway?
Yeah, we did touch on that earlier. It's funny. I mean, like, the subway is a place where there are a lot of people who don't have an agenda. Like, it's an audience that doesn't have anything better to do in many ways, you know, and or isn't programmed. I like to think of spaces as being programmed or not programmed. Like, when you're at a theater, or when you're at a bar, or when you're at a restaurant, like, you have a program, you have a reason that you're there, an intention, in a way. And when you're on the subway, you know, your only intention is that you're, like, waiting till you get off. And I think that there's something really potent about someone who can be open, or so being in a place where people can be a little more open and not worrying about like having an agenda that they need to get done in that space. You know, you could be more open when you're not as programmed. So that's one of them. And then the other thing is, as we got into, like, it's a funnel that all these people are always funneling into, and it's a common shared experience that almost all New Yorkers have. And
sure.
You know, I think sort of rain and the subway are like the two things that like really are social levelers in a way, and allow us to like have these common experiences, or weather in general and the subway. So it's those like two things combined. I think, I mean, there may be more, but those are the two things that come to mind.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect note to leave it off on.
Okay.
Unless you have anything else to add to the conversation.
No, that's fine.
All right. So go ahead and plug your website one more time, just for good measure.
Sure. My website is jasonepink.com. That's jasonepink.com.
And you can find tons of photos of all the projects that we spoke about, and I think a couple videos as well, probably.
I try to do videos.
The website that I do is called... I'm sure you've never heard of it before. It's called Subway Art Blog, subwayartblog.com.
Oh, that's what we're doing here?
If you have any submissions, which I strongly suggest, please send to subwayartblog@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Joey Romano. See you underground.